Some things we'll try and find a bit of space for and turn and discuss. We hope to do a fair amount of that as we go through, but other things I'll just say to you, look, take away with you. Find a time, find a moment just to do it by yourself. Is that all right? I've called this just taking the journey inwards. And it's a lovely opportunity. It's just women together. It's not necessarily all about women's type things, but it is an opportunity to think from a woman's perspective. You know, how do I handle various things? How do I, as a woman, approach life? How do I deal with things? How do I relate to people? And I hope that actually being as women together with only a couple of men on the sideline, just ignore them, that we'll be able to share more openly, more honestly, and have a good time together just in this next hour. But I want us to be really practical in this seminar and look at how we can strengthen our mental, emotional, even physical, and of course spiritual health. Really important, so important to pay attention to every part of our lives, because of course each part will affect the other. Nothing is in isolation. So I'm going to talk about, you know, establishing healthy patterns, guarding against burnout, growing in self-awareness, growing in maturity, spiritual maturity. Because all these things will help to sustain us through a lifetime of following Jesus. And I want to start with probably one of the most important aspects of all, the first point on in your notes. Living in our true identity. Living in our true identity. And of course, as I said before, this isn't just a peculiar to us as women, but there are pertinent things for us as women. It would mean the same for the men too. Living in our true identity. This is the starting point for each one of us as we begin this journey inwards. Now just think for a moment. How would our lives be different if we knew without a doubt that we were truly loved and accepted by God? We knew without a doubt, we never doubted it. That was our bottom line, that God loves me, he accepts me, he knows me, faults and all, but he loves me. What difference would it make to how we think, what we say, what we do? I mean, to me, that gives me such a sense of, yeah, I would be different. I would react to certain situations and people differently if I knew that, if I really knew that. If that was my bottom line, I wouldn't have, you know, the doubts and fears and anxieties and insecurities that I often just live with. You know, if I were to ask you what words you would use to describe yourself right now, what would you say? Not of course describing your outward appearance, forget about that for a moment, but how would you describe your character, your true self? And you might like to scribble things down. There's a few empty pages at the back of your notebooks. You might like to just sort of, you know, think. You might be too scared to write things down, but just using just words, not phrases, even just words, how would you describe yourself? What words would you use to describe yourself right now? Don't be too spiritual about it. You know, think of all sort of different aspects of your life, your personality. What words would you use? No one else is going to look at this list. I'm not going to ask you to share it. So write down whatever you feel. Some of this might be quite hard. Might be quite sort of a bit of an ouchy moment. What words would we use? Because the question is, do we see ourselves as God sees us? Or are we living with a distorted and untrue image of ourselves? Because you see, right back in the beginning, in the Garden of Eden, we are told Adam and Eve were naked and unashamed. Those words, of course, don't just describe their physical state. They describe their emotional and spiritual state. They were unafraid, we're told. There was nothing to hide, in other words. And then came the fall. And the effects of the fall are that now we spend our lives, most of our lives, hiding, putting on masks, you know, fearful of what others may think, isolated often because of our insecurities. And that's how the enemy would have it. You see, Satan doesn't create, only God creates. God is the creator. Satan can only pervert, distort, and destroy. That's what we're told. He takes what God has made, what is good, and he perverts and distorts and destroys. And that is what our world, the world we're living in, is experiencing, the effects of the fall, and us too. And that's why it's such a struggle so often for us to accept our true identity in Christ, to believe that we are chosen and beloved daughters of God. And it's hard work, isn't it, seeing ourselves differently, if actually we've created a different image, a different image of ourselves. Change is difficult, changing old, familiar patterns. And the fact is, we women are often very hard on ourselves. We can be highly critical. We judge ourselves quite harshly. I don't know what you wrote down in that little list, but I reckon there's probably some quite hard things that often we think or say about us, think about ourselves. Critical of how we look or how we perform or how we compare with others. And we see ourselves through a lens, and that lens has been shaped through our culture. And our culture tells us certain things, doesn't it? Over and over and over again. It tells us we should be more attractive, more youthful, more intelligent, more outgoing, more confident. So suddenly we start to live with shame and disappointment and even frustration, because we can't match up, we can't live up to this image that the world has created. And what we've got to remember is there is a spiritual battle going on. It's not just about us, it's about, you know, it's much bigger than us. The enemy of our souls is out to rob us of our identity. And one of the most successful ways I believe the enemy does that is to mess with our minds. I don't know if you've ever heard or used that little phrase. The enemy messes with our minds. And he's a master at this. And one of the clever tricks that he gets is to get us to repeat his thoughts. Have you ever noticed how easy it is? We never need to be reminded of anything negative about ourselves. You know, I'm not good enough, or I'm not lovable enough, or I'm not intelligent enough, or successful enough. You never need to be reminded of those things. These are very familiar phrases for many of us. And we hear those things again and again. And the problem is that when we repeat those things to ourselves, we start to believe them. They start to take root in us. Satan messes with our minds. He plays with our minds. Now, I wonder, do you recognise how he plays you personally? What strategies he uses, what easy footholds he gains? Because it'll be different for each one of us. Do you know how he works you personally, where your vulnerabilities are? What's the talk going on in your head, the different ways, the different voices you listen to? Maybe the fearful voice. Maybe the condoning voice or the condemning voice, the doubting voice. How is the enemy messing with our minds? Because we need to be alert to his methods and recognise the battle, the very real battle that we're in, the fight for our identity. Because the stories we believe about ourselves will inform who we're becoming and the choices we make day by day. These stories have the power to define us, to propel us, or actually to undermine us. And the truth is, you know, we can waste so much of our lives living under negative scripts. You know, I'm too ordinary, I'm too stupid, I'm too ugly, I'm too, you know. We need to ask ourselves, what stories have we allowed in that have replaced God's better story? The best story of all. The story of God's love and rescue over our lives. Because the enemy will always reinforce the negative narrative, and we need to learn how to silence him. And I think this is a really important one for us as women. And we can do that. Let me just suggest very, very briefly four ways in which we can do this. We can come against this negative narrative. Firstly, through the power of daily decisions. Very simply, daily decisions, small, important daily decisions that refuse to collude with the enemy's narrative. Just saying to ourselves, I won't go there. I'm not going to do that. For me, there was a period in my life when I realised I had a bit of a thing about my weight, and I realised that the enemy would make me feel good or bad about myself depending on those scales that I got on every day. So I decided I would put the scales away, put them in a cupboard. I wasn't going to get on them. I wasn't going to collude with the enemy by saying to me, "Oh, it's a good day. No, it's a bad day. Oh, you really need to do something." You mustn't collude with the enemy. Secondly, through the power of naming the narrative. A little bit like I just said just now. When things are kept secret, the enemy has oxygen to fuel the fire. Do you find that? Name the narrative. Name that thing. Even dare to share that thing with a friend. With another girlfriend. Name that habit, that belief that holds you captive. And already you'll find that the hold is loosened. Number three, through the power of going back to look forward. Because sometimes, you know, we need to go back. We need to go back over our story and to help us understand the underlying narrative in our lives that maybe has shaped our thinking and not in the best way. And I'm going to touch on that a little bit later. Fourthly, by the power of community, keeping close to others. You have a wonderful community here. Paul and I just last night were just saying, what a wonderful community, family you have here. You need each other. Take advantage of that family, the older and the younger ones among you. Don't stick with your own peer group. Make sure that, you know, you're hearing and talking and learning from each other. You need each other. We can't do this stuff alone. So the question is, how are you growing your friendships here in this community? How are you proactively, you know, reaching out to different people in this family? And again, I'm just going to touch on that a little bit later. And then the power of aligning ourselves with, yes, this better story. The better story of who we are, who we truly are, and what we're called to. You see, God is powerful enough to break down even the deepest narrative and write his better story over us. And I love the little phrase in Psalm 107 where it says, "Let the redeemed of the Lord tell their story." Isn't that a great little phrase? Even a good little phrase to hold on to and use as a powerful sort of, you know, almost holding up your fist against the enemy. I am one of the redeemed and I will tell my story. The best story of all. The power of the best narrative. So let me return to that first question. How would you describe yourself? And I don't know what words you wrote down or thought, but now, just for a moment, right now, I want you to ask God, maybe even just close your eyes and you can just focus on him. Ask God what words he would use to describe you. How would he describe you? How would he want to affirm your identity? Maybe in a very definite way, maybe coming against some of the negative script. Just ask him right now. How would you describe me, God? What do you want me to hear right now? We're not trying to pretend to be God or to think his thoughts, but he loves to speak his words, his truth into our lives. And sometimes we just have to give him space to do that instead of rushing on, rattling on with our own thoughts and our own way. And again, if you want to write down any of those words so that you make sure you hold on to them, maybe go back to them. Lord, we thank you that you are a good, good God. And you love to give good things to your children. And you know, you created us. You know that as women we do have particular insecurities, fears, anxieties. We often have particular experiences that have shaped us, that have tried to push us into a mould, have trapped us in unhealthy patterns of behaviour and habits. And we want to invite you right now to come and to maybe begin to just turn us back towards you so that we're not facing the world. What a great little call. That we're not facing the world, we're not receiving just the stuff that the world would give us, but we're looking to you, turning to you, receiving what you would want us to hear. We're daughters of the King, chosen and beloved. And I guess some of you may find that quite difficult even to hear, let alone to receive. And this will take some working out. God is a good, good God. So, believing in our true identity. I promise you, not every point is going to be as heavy as that. I really promise. Developing a healthy self-knowledge. Now, I love this one, again, because it's practical and there's tools we can use. And right through this seminar, I just hope that there's tools you can take away for the job, because we can't, this seminar won't do it all for us, unfortunately. I hope what it will give is, it will give us tools to go away and say, okay, I've got some things in my handy box that I can get out and I can use to help me, to dig deeper, to take this journey inwards. So the next one, developing a healthy self-knowledge. Someone said this, leading in. You will never have a more difficult person to lead than yourself. And I don't know about you, but I found that to be so true. I'd rather lead anyone else or a whole congregation rather than myself and have to look at myself. But no one else can do this work of self-awareness for us. We've each got to do it for ourselves. That's why it's called self-awareness. So very practically, we need to study ourselves in the best way, in an introspective and sort of self-absorbed type of way, but in a healthy way, understanding our temperament, our inclinations, and yes, even our failings, our vulnerabilities. Recognising, you see, that most problems we encounter are in here rather than out there. I would love, you know, when something so difficult comes along, to be able to blame it on something or someone else. But most of the times, it's something to do with me, if not all to do with me. So if things are going wrong, we need to get into the habit of looking at ourselves first. And, do you know, I found the easiest way to do that is simply to ask questions. Get good at asking ourselves questions. Even as we walk out the front door in the morning, ask yourself, ask God. What do I need to purge out of me right now as I go out into the world so I don't splurge over everyone else? Now, what I mean by that is that I need to purposefully leave certain things behind as I move from one place to another. So, maybe going out the door in the first thing in the morning, we've got to recognise that, you know, there's been a difficult conversation with my spouse, left unresolved. There's a worry over finance. There's a problem with one of the children. There's a nagging fear about my health. And as I go to work or go into another situation, another group of people, you know, we've got to be aware that that's what we can take with us. Now, I don't know if you found this, but certainly I have. I've been in a situation at work or even in a church meeting or in a group of friends when someone just explodes out of nowhere. And you know it's nothing to do with actually what you said or what's going on there. It's something they brought with them. I mean, just think of the places you move to and from during the day. What do you need to leave behind as you move from one situation to another? And if we don't leave things behind, what emotion might we find ourselves projecting or transferring from one group of people, one set of relationships to another? You know, work, family, church, social. When we're leaving work to make our way home or leaving home to go to a church meeting, how do we realise how much who I am in one situation will affect who I am in another? This is called engaging with self, making a note to self. That's a little phrase, again, that I came across. And of course, it's not, you know, as we're doing now, we're scribbling down things. It's just making a note to self, that inner voice. someone said, actually, we ought to have three conversations going on at the same time. That sounds impossible, but let me explain. You know, we're having a conversation with someone in front of us. That's natural, that's normal. But we also, of course, as believers, we're actually, hopefully, engaging with God at the same time. So as we're talking to our friend or our colleague or whatever, we're actually hopefully aware of God just prompting us or giving us a little insight or helping us to know what questions to ask. Listening to that inner voice of the Spirit. Now, many of us can be quite good at those two conversations. What we're not so good at is the third conversation. It's the conversation with ourselves. So, for example, you're in a group of people, you know, and as the discussion is going on, you're making just mental notes to yourself, engaging with self, saying to yourself, you know, well, why is that? Do I feel threatened by that contribution? What's going on there? Or why am I suddenly getting defensive? Why am I feeling that person doesn't like me? Why am I reacting so strongly to that particular comment? Do you see? Yeah. It's those notes to self, that's conversation, checking in with self. Someone called it exploring the iceberg. In other words, you know, trying to work out what's going on under the surface. That deep, hidden area, vast area of our own feelings and responses, insecurities and temptations. We need to get used to engaging with self. I found it really useful at the end of each day to just, even just as I'm drifting off to sleep, not making it a very sort of methodical or conscious sort of thing, just as I'm going off to sleep, taking a moment to look back over the day. And I use the little phrase now, which actually Paul and I picked up when we were doing parenting children's course. A little phrase called mad, bad, sad or glad. Have you come across that one? We used it with our family sort of at the supper table. But I use it now just to look back on my day. What am I mad about? What's sort of just got me a bit stirred up? Just been left as a sort of remnant of it, just left with me. What stirred me up today? What am I feeling bad about? What's, in other words, been left unresolved? What's left me feeling a little bit sort of uneasy? What am I sad about? What am I heavy about? What's made me feel just upset or distressed me? It's not going away. And what am I glad about? Yeah, what's been good? What's been productive? What's been fulfilling today? So all just good questions to develop our self-awareness. And you can do it in just a couple of minutes. I honestly do it often as I'm just lying back on the pillow. Just looking back over the day. And then I turn them into prayer. You know. Again, just for a couple of minutes, a couple of seconds even. Why don't you do it now? Try it now. Just think back over maybe the last couple of days and just try answering those four questions. What am I mad about? What am I feeling bad about? What am I sad about? What am I glad about? Answering those four questions. Don't be too spiritual about it. Just anything that's been sort of happening, coming at you. What's been going on? Not just what has happened, not just facts, but feelings. How's it made you feel? Okay, and just turn those things over to God. Particularly those things that are left unresolved. Those things that actually you haven't been able to sort. You're just sort of left with. Just turn them over to God. Do you see? It can be done as quickly as that. Just in a couple of minutes. But it just keeps us in that place of just not leaving things sort of just sort of down, pushed down, but allowing them just to come to the surface, recognising them. It's not that we can sort them, but we recognise them and we give them to God. Number three, understanding our personalities follows on quite well. Working with our personality, not against it. Not comparing or competing with others, which is, I'm afraid, it's a real... I know the men do it too, but I think we women are particularly bad at that. Comparing and competing. And I'm going to come back to that again and again. But learning what energises us and what drains us personally. What times of day, what situations, what people... What tasks affect us negatively and positively? Asking ourselves, you know, has life just taken over and we find that our life has been filled up with lots of things that actually affect us quite negatively rather than positively? or people who drain us rather than energize us. You know, these sort of, life can just sort of take over. We can suddenly find, you know, we're in a very different place from where we were even 6 months ago. And sometimes this explains why we're actually feeling quite heavy, quite tired. Yeah, quite drained. Just think about the kind of things that, yeah, drain you and the things that energise you. Again, it'll be so different for each one of us. For me, I'm one of the staff members in our church, and so there's a lot of meetings, and I know I am not, you know, I don't mind meetings, but meetings that sort of look at the big picture, do blue sky thinking, bore me silly. You know, give me a job to do, give me a list of things to do, I'm on it. But anything, details, I love. But this sort of, you know, big picture stuff, oh, dry, you know, yeah, it drives me, I really can't do it. I'm a detail person. Again, I'm an extrovert, but I've realised, but maybe particularly as I've got a bit older, that I need space too. More space than I used to. So having too many people living with us or going through the house, you know, actually isn't as good as it doesn't feel as good as it used to. I'm a grandmother now, a totally overexcitable grandmother. And, you know, again, for me, spending an afternoon with the grandchildren, you know, it's draining in one sense because it is exhausting, but my goodness, it fills up my tank. You know, it's that sort of sense of, oh, yes, oh, the absorption. You know, I love it. A game of tennis. Again, I realised it, I, you know, in the business of life, I had stopped playing tennis, you know, with my girlfriends. And I realised actually that's a real miss, probably by competitive spirit. I miss out on that. But walking, as I said again this morning, walking, I love that. Living in London is tough for that. You know, I often find I'm, you know, almost screaming for a bit of, you know, really good chomping through the crunchy side. Think back over this last week, and I want you to write down three things that you really loved, three activities you loved, and three things that you could even say as strongly that you loathed. You really didn't love, but you had to do them. Okay, three things you loved, three things you loathed. Then I want you to turn to the person next to you and maybe share some of those things. You may not want to share them all, but, you know, I'll give you freedom with that. Turn to the person next to you and tell them in particular something you loved and why you loved it. Not just what it was, but why. Why did it make you feel so good? Why was it special for you? Why did it fill up your tank? Do you see? So just for a moment, scribble down three things you loved, three things you loathed.
Christine.
Yeah. Pen. Yes, anyone else like a pen? I don't want you thinking too hard. You should have done all three things you loved already. Yep. And now three things you didn't like so much or you even loathed. Again, don't be too spiritual. If you loved making, you know, I don't know, a good curry, that was your highlight of the week, that's great. Or you found a bargain in the sales, you know, again, it's great. Anything at all. And then turn to the person next to you and maybe just share in particular one thing you loved and why you loved it. Go for it. Okay, it's always tricky getting women to stop talking. But I don't know what you all shared with each other, but I bet it was different for each person. And can I ask you, coming out of that, and this is a serious one, what fresh resolve do you need to make sure that you're giving time to something that re-energises, recharges your batteries? Because as women, we often find that actually we can look back and think, my whole week has been dictated to by other people, other situations. And that's serious, that's a lovely thing about women, but also it's a real danger because we can find that actually we're just running on other people's agendas and we're giving. We're allowed, I give you permission to find pockets of time. And we can find them, let's be honest, for all of us. It takes some determination and something else we'll have to give, yes. but to find time for some things that recharge us personally, whatever it might be. And we don't have hours and hours, but we can find some pockets of time. So let's resolve to do that. And particularly if you feel right now that actually you are feeling quite drained. You know, life doesn't, you know, there's not much that recharges you. The tiredness has sort of just taken over, that sort of heaviness. This is really important. Finding things, reminding ourselves of the things that really do meet us, meet our needs. Just the things that fill us up. I mean, are there creative activities? I think particularly, again, for us as women, those are the first things that go. You know, whether it's just, I don't know, music, art, writing, whatever. Those things are often the first things that go. But creativity, you know, stifled creativity has a deathly dulling effect on our souls if that's the thing that, you know, feeds us. Let's not leave ourselves and our own needs to last, because actually we won't be giving as we want to the other things unless we are giving to ourselves on these things. You're right. It's okay. Are you sure you're not bored? You're sure you're not just fed up? And okay, number four, recognising our drivers. The truth is, for many of us, we are quite driven sort of people. And if we're honest, the roots of our drivenness are usually self-sufficiency and self-centeredness, pride and independence. Now, here are five common drivers that can control what we do and what we value. Number one, the drive to be perfect. Okay, so success and achievement will be very important things to some of us. If you're a perfectionist like me, you like to be in control of things. You probably don't like taking risks, necessarily. Secondly, the drive to please others. Again, for women, such an important thing. So often, we're constantly looking for approval and affirmation from others, those around us. We're controlled by the opinion of others, which, quite honestly, can sometimes be exhausting, because we never find that we've done enough. The drive for efficiency, so we have high standards for ourselves and for those around us. And that can make us hard taskmasters, difficult to live with, for our husbands or our work colleagues or our children. And the drive to be strong. So appearance might be all important to us. We don't like showing signs of weakness. So often we put up a front. We don't let people in very easily. We very easily get isolated. The drive to try harder. So we're very determined people. We're always pushing for more. But we often don't know when to stop. We don't know when enough is enough. Now, I wonder what you see of yourself in those five drivers. Sometimes it's a bit of all five, isn't it? But one or two of those will be more pertinent to you than maybe the others. And the important thing to note, and straight away, is to say that none of these characteristics are bad in themselves. They each have their strengths and weaknesses. These drivers only become problematic when they actually start controlling the speed and direction of our lives. That's when they start to get become problematic. You know, a number of years ago, I realised I had an increasing problem with guilt, a fear of letting people down, disappointing them. And I realised that much of my motivation for ministry was actually out of guilt. You know, trying to please everyone, never feeling I'd done enough. And my recurring bad dream was that I'd wake up and I'd with a feeling that I'd upset someone, and I didn't know what I'd done or who it was. You know, guilt had become my driver. And it became, you know, quite exhausting, as you can imagine, especially as a vicar's wife, you know, with all the people you could have possibly upset. And I had to ask God, where was this all coming from? And he just very graciously gave me some insights over a period of time of where this all began. You see, my parents went through years of unhappiness, and they eventually divorced when I actually was in my late 20s. But it went on right through my childhood and teenage years. And my response had been initially, first of all, to try and be the good girl, to try and make things better between them. And then to be the peace, to be the peacemaker, to be the mediator, to try and help them make peace. And neither had worked. And they finally divorced, I say, when in my late 20s, and my father died in a car crash, a sudden and unexplicable car crash, a year later, leaving me actually with the terrible, again, terrible guilt feelings of, you know, where was I when he died? What did I, you know, I hadn't helped him. Was he in a place where he just got to, you know, desperation? I'd let them down, I'd let him down. And, you know, irrational but real. And those strong fears and insecurities stay with us unless they're dealt with. And they will prove an easy landing stage for the enemy. Now, I have to tell you, I am not someone who does this work of introspection easily, readily. You know, I'm a doer, as I said. You know, I like to be active. I do everything fast. My children tell me, whether it's ironing or cooking or, you know, anything. I do things fast. I don't like, you know, the slow work of introspection, having to, you know, look back and sort out. But more seriously, I think I've become an expert at just pushing things away, thinking that if I didn't, you know, if I ignored them for long enough, they would just go away. And that, you know, that is just such an untruth. It's such a lie. Because these problems, the problems we have, if we never deal with them, the hurts and traumas in our lives, we will set ourselves up for a vicious cycle of unlearned lessons, unsolved grief, and unresolved issues. And we've got to be brave enough and persistent enough to uncover, to unravel those deeper emotions and attitudes that will form our character. They will affect our heart. They will affect how we are with other people now. Sometimes, you see, we have to look back in order to move forward. Take time to dig out the roots. Now, just again, turn to your neighbour and just share at any level you feel able. Share if any of these drivers have begun to maybe control you, the way, the speed, the direction of your life. Have they, any of these drivers, become problematic to you, either in the past or right now? Just go for it. Again, to stop conversations. This is a fascinating one, isn't it? A good one to keep sharing with each other. I mean, maybe if you've got a husband or a boyfriend, go back and, you know, share it with them, because they often, those closest to us, often have the clearest insights. And certainly as women together, you know, that this sense of speaking into each other's lives, you know, helping to check each other. Encourage each other, yes, but sometimes we need to check each other. Do you know, a dear friend of mine, someone who's worked, been alongside me for the 30 years we've been at St. Mark's, and we are the closest of friends. But I remember her distinctly about 10 years into our time here at St. Mark's. She took me aside and she said these words, or something very similar to them. She said, "Christine, you push yourself very hard and you make things hard for yourself. But more than that, you make things hard for other people. You don't give them space to grow." You know, that was a word in season. And she had the right to say that, because she knew me well. And she loved me. But we need to get to that place in our friendships, of being able to speak into each other's lives, to see when actually we're just hurting ourselves and hurting other people. And that word in season, you know, okay, it might be hard to hear. I'm sure I bristled and sort of, I don't. But, you know, it stayed with me. And it was an important word, and it's been a continued, you know, you can hear, see, hear, I remembered it. So let's not be afraid. Let's get close enough to each other so that we have permission, we have the right to speak into each other's lives, to caution each other. Yeah, let's hope for the best of motives, to encourage each other, spur each other on. Number five, learning from the past. Now, this is, again, it's an important one, isn't it? We've all been shaped by our experiences in life, the good things and the bad things. But how do we recognise the impact these different experiences have had on us? Are we aware of just how these things have shaped us, both in the good ways and the bad ways? So I've just listed some in your handouts, and this is one of the things I'm just going to send you away with, because it's something actually that would be good to just take time over. You know, look back in your family. What did you learn growing up in your family? This will be absolutely key to who we are now. You know, yep, the bad stuff and the good stuff. Let's not be afraid to look back. This is something we do when we do the marriage prep course, and it's something that is so relevant to them at that time in their lives as they're moving into a new family unit. Knowing, understanding the family that they came from and what, you know, what they bring with them. Education, yeah, good one to look back. What were your favourite subjects at school? Why? You know, what made you tick then? What energised you? At work, what jobs have you enjoyed most and been most effective in? Good thing just to remember, you know, sometimes when we get a little bit lost, and particularly for women, when, you know, we can easily lose confidence, you know, if we've had children and coming back, wanting to get back into work. So many of us find, you know, it really hard to know who am I? What am I good at? Am I good at anything? And we need to build confidence. We need to understand ourselves, have a good self-awareness. Prayer, what have been your most meaningful times with God? Again, I know we're encouraged to have quiet times, but what is a quiet time for you? It's not for me. It's not sitting in a room in a, you know, in a chair in silence. I can't do that. You know, that's not my idea of a quiet time with God. Get me out walking, and I will talk my socks off with him. And you know, but so we're all different. But work out what have been how do you operate? What have been your most meaningful times with God? Ministry, how have you served God in the past? What worked well? What didn't? You know, again, if you're trying to find your way forward, if you're getting a bit stuck, if you've been out of ministry for a while, you know, thinking how can I find my way in? Look back to look forward. Relationships, how well are you relating to family, to work colleagues, to critics even? Again, really important just to take review. Think to yourself, yeah, how are those key relationships working? And the big one of all, biggest one probably, suffering. What problems, what hurts, what trials have you experienced? You know, pain, loss, sickness, failure, redundancy, delay, lack of money. What have we learned from those things? You know, this last, that section is probably the most key one of all, because the problems we face will either defeat us or develop us. They'll either draw us closer to God, or they'll push us away from him, depending on how we respond to them. You know, when things are hard, when circumstances are tough, we're all tempted to ask. I think every single one of us at one point will say, you know, look at God and say, are you there? Can you hear me? Do you care? Because life, you know, life is tough sometimes. And we need, you know, it takes guts, it takes determination to push through with God. And if things don't change or are left unresolved, we can find our heart, you know, responding in a number of different ways. We can get quite hard-hearted. We can get quite angry. We can get quite self-absorbed, even self-righteous. We can get self-pitying. God has moved the goalposts, and he's left us confused and upset, and everything around us has changed, and God seems to have changed too. He used to be good and just and fair, and now he seems to be cruel and arbitrary, and we're disappointed. You know, we can become disappointed with life, with the hand life has dealt us, but we can become disappointed with God too. And that attitude can leave us in a very dangerous place if, again, we don't address it. For me, there was a particular moment. It was about 10 years ago. We have a very young congregation, as I said, and my work in particular has been with the younger end of the congregation and with young couples in the marriage prep course and things like that. So spending a lot of time, you know, just talking with people about their relationships, about, you know, just their lives. But a number of years ago, one of our daughters was badly hurt by one of the young men in our congregation. He was one of our young leaders. And it had all looked like it was heading. Do go. It's fine. You don't want to pick up children. Absolutely fine. Yep. Do.
We don't want to leave.
He was one of our leaders. We thought it was heading for marriage. That's what he'd said. And suddenly he backed off inexplicably. And the worst thing for him, he started going out with another girl in the congregation very quickly. And it was agony for me. It was agony dealing, you know, with the disappointment for my daughter, my anger with this young man, and having to pretend to the congregation that it was all okay. You know, it was all fine. Don't worry, it's fine. It's under control. But, you know, the hardest thing to deal with was my anger with God. How could you let that happen? Right in the middle of our church family. How could he have allowed that to happen? When I poured myself out for young people all these years, and now this had happened. And it was that moment of reckoning for me when I heard myself talking to God as though he owed me something. As if he'd done something wrong. And I had to get down on my knees and let go of all my anger and my and say to him, I've got no rights, no rights. You don't owe me anything, God. And I had to let go of my anger to that young man. I had to free my daughter from my expectations of who or how or when she should get married. And put God back at the centre. Put God back in charge. Now that's the thing, isn't it? Have we learned how to keep God at the centre when all around us life seems to be uncertain, harsh even, unpredictable? Keeping God at the centre. I know there have been, you know, that's just one, one experience. But there have been many times when I know I've had to get down on my knees again and say, God, I've got it wrong. I've done it wrong. And I need you back where you belong. So take that away with you. Look at those things. It's good. Number six, don't ignore the warning signs. When things feel like they're getting out of control, there's a question I found really helpful to ask. Is this an episode? Is this just an episode, or has it become a lifestyle? And I think for us women, it's an important question. Because I think we can find ourselves very quickly moving from probably maybe quite a healthy, but you know, quite a pressured sort of. We can be in times of pressure, can't we? And it can be okay. And we know, you know, maybe it's for a season, or maybe it's just that, you know, actually, yeah, this is the job we're in, and this is what it's demanding of us. But sometimes we can move from a healthy state of pressure to a very unhealthy state of pressure in a very short time. And if we don't recognise that and recognise that actually we're very near the edge, we're very near overload, you know, we can land up in some very, you know, some very bad places. So just recognising the different levels of anxiety and pressure, like the warning lights on a dashboard in a car that, you know, my husband Paul tells me I take absolutely no notice of, but I know there's a fuel light that flashes at me and then goes full on if I fail to, you know, top up the fuel. And it's a bit like that with us. We need to know the warning lights. And I've just written down 8 amber, or maybe even stroke amber red warning signs of overload, possible overload. Things like your main emotion is numbness. You know, when you're healthy, you feel you have highs and lows, natural things. When you get to overload, your heart begins to get a bit numb. You don't feel things properly anymore. Number two, you become a bit cynical. You know, cynicism never finds a home in a healthy heart. If you find your cynicism of people, things, situations is advancing at a rapid rate, you need to watch it. Little things make you angry. It's not that you know, you feel zero emotion, but very often, little things can become disproportionately important. You find that when you're just too overloaded. Something like a missed deadline, which should be, you know, a 7 out of 10, becomes an 11 out of 10. You suddenly explode. You treat small things like they're big things. Nothing satisfies. This is a very interesting one, but when, you know, you get overloaded, you could be doing lots of things, but nothing really satisfies you anymore. When nobody or nothing re-energizes you, even those things that used to, you know, your children or your husband or your work, used to be places that were good places, suddenly they feel like they're just another drain on your resources. Look out. Your productivity drops. When you find that you are working very long hours, very hard, but with very little results, again, it's often a sign that you're just pushing yourself too hard. Sleep and time off no longer refuel you. You know, if you're healthy, you know, and pressured, you will find that having a, you know, a good weekend off or a week away or even a good night's sleep will help to re-energise you. If you've got to that place of overload, even a, you know, a fortnight's holiday won't necessarily recharge your batteries. You need more than that. Sleep and time off no longer refuel you. This looks like a small one, but you don't laugh much anymore. You know, it's actually a big thing, isn't it? When the joy goes. If you're burning out, you don't laugh a lot. Nothing seems funny or fun. And it's worse, you begin to resent people who are having fun. And for eighthly, your passion fades. Now, everybody struggles with passion from time to time, but burnout, when you begin to just, you know, lose yourself, burnout takes you into a place of sustained motivation loss. And however hard you try, you can't conjure up that passion for life and for, you know, anymore. Now, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand if you recognise all eight of those signs. But if you are recognising more than, you know, four or five, I just say to you, find a good girlfriend. Find a place, you know, where you can share, you know, the tensions, the pressures. Don't let it go any longer. Number seven, keeping close to others. Again, I mentioned this, but it's really important that we don't get isolated. That's why God put us in families. Both natural families and this church family, this extraordinary thing, the church family. We've got those around us. We need to keep close to them. And I just put a number of who questions, and again, I'm going to send you away with those. But take those away and just work them out for yourself. And all I'd say to you is, you're not allowed to put Jesus down as an answer to any of those, because that's a given. And if you are married, again, you're not allowed to put your husband down, because that's a given. But you see, who are the people in your life? Who speak into your life, who stand alongside you, who you have fun with, who you look to. Okay? Really important one. Number eight, beware when the joy goes. And I love that word joy because it actually is a very Christian word, isn't it? It's not used in many secular sort of spheres. Joy says so much more than just happiness, doesn't it? Joy that sort of, you know, reaches deep down into our lives. So often we hear testimonies of people who are going through the most awful of times, but they have a joy still, a joy in knowing God, knowing that He still loves them. Again, I've just put a few questions that might challenge you, and challenge you if you feel that, you know, your joy has started to deplete. What's happened to my friendships? When did I take part in something that wasn't my responsibility? What have I stopped doing or giving time to that used to give me joy? Have I stopped being grateful for the small things? That is such a key, isn't it? When we become sort of overloaded, overpressured, joyless, our gratitude levels sink. We fail to recognise that actually there's a lot to give thanks for still. Am I allowing comparison, competition to creep in? That is a joy taker, straight away. Because, you know, comparison and competition, comparison in particular, will just always tell us the worst thing about ourselves. Because we always compare ourselves with someone who we think is doing it better, you know, than us. We will always do that. We always compare above. And have I given myself permission to say no recently? You know, we mustn't be scared of that little two-letter word. And I think as women, often, we don't know how to say that word. And that's often the reason why we get into overload. We need to be able to say no to the bigger yes. That was a little phrase that released me a bit, to be able to say, I'm saying no, not because I'm being difficult or because I just don't want to. I'm saying no because actually there are other things that I need to attend to, other things that are my bigger yes. And it takes away the guilt factor, or helps to. Saying no to the bigger yes. We have a family story when Paul and I learnt one of these, saying no to the bigger yes. Our children were all sort of just coming into school age years. So the youngest, Max, must have been about four or five, just starting full-time school. And up till then, I'd been doing probably like a lot of months, you know, children's tea at five, then maybe, you know, trying to, we would try and have supper any time between 7 and 10 o'clock at night. And sometimes I could feel like I was cooking all evening and for, you know, just for bits and pieces of the family. So we said, no, we're going to have supper at 6, as many evenings of the week as we possibly can, make it a really nice family time, candles, you know, pudding, music, you know, really quality family time. So we did this, and we stupidly, though, didn't turn off our phones, Paul and I. And children didn't have them at that point. And we answered them. And there was one particular family meal when we must have answered the phone a couple of times, you know, just sort of sorting out things as the meal was going on. Phone went again, and Max, who was 4, got up from the table and said, I'll answer it. And I can remember Paul and I looking across the table and saying, you know, sort of saying, oh, sweet boy, so good, isn't that so helpful? It's really growing up, really so helpful. Went over to the phone, picked it up, and simply said in a theatrical whisper, go away. Don't know who the person was. They've never admitted to be told to go away. But it really taught us a lesson. You know, we'd promised something, we had said our yes to something, and we had failed to deliver. Saying no to the bigger yes. So beware when the joy goes. Number 9, looking after our heart. Now, the book of Psalms is a wonderful book, isn't it? But it gives us a myriad of different descriptions about the heart. Talks about, if you just think about it, talks about a stubborn heart, a proud heart, a clean heart, a broken heart, a contrite heart, a pure heart, an undivided heart, a joyful heart, a glad heart, you know, because the list goes on and on. Each description is telling us something about the true state of that person, who they really are. And if you remember, David even invites God to test, to search him. Search me, he says, and test me. Know my heart. Know my anxious thoughts. Now, I wonder what God would find if we invited him to do that. Do you need to? If we invited him to do that right now. Come, God, search me. Know my heart. What sort of heart have I got? How would I describe my heart right now? What words would I use? Because our heart, actually, again, we want soft hearts, don't we? We want undivided hearts. We want joyful hearts. But we need to allow God to test us, to show us the state of our hearts. And I've just written down a group of questions there that might help us to check the state of our heart. So again, take those away with you. Check the state of your heart. Then number 10, and we're coming into land here, deepening our character. Because this is probably going to be one of the biggest challenges. Bye-bye. Have a good lunch. This is probably going to be the biggest challenges for each one of us, developing an authentic and integrated character. The world celebrates gifts, doesn't it? Whether or not they have the character to sustain them. And we've got to reverse that. We must look at character first. And character is foundational to everything. Let's just be clear. Character is different from personality. We're born with our personality. Our character grows and develops as we and is determined by the choices we make in life. And you can be, I've heard character described in a very simple but telling little phrase, who you are when no one else is looking. Who you are when no one else is looking. I don't particularly like that phrase, but it's a true one, isn't it? That phrase begins to get to the root of what character really is. Our true character will reveal itself at particular moments. It shows itself in, for instance, in the privacy of our own home. You know, where there isn't a public audience or we don't think we'll be judged or found out. What are we really like at those times? How do we speak to our husband or our children? How do we talk about other people? Our true character will show itself in the small things. How we treat other people on a daily basis. Do we honour those who are less able than us? Are we patient with those who aren't as efficient as us? Are we respectful of those who aren't like us? Just the other day, I was again with our son Max. He's now 30, and it was just before he was getting married, and we went into Debenhams to buy him a jacket, a going-away jacket. And got to the checkout queue, and the cashier was just making an absolute horlicks of the checkout. And it was a long queue, and I just looked at him and I said, I can't believe this. Look, you know, look what she's doing. You know, we got to the front of the queue, and yet again she tapped it in wrong, so, you know, failed to take off the tag. And I was huffing and puffing by this stage and tut-tutting her, and my hands were on my hips. And Max just put a hand on my arm. He said, "Don't, Mum, don't." And when we went out of the shop, he just said, "How do you know what sort of day she's had? How do you know if this isn't her first day at work? How do you know if she hasn't come from just an awful time, you know, what family, what's going on in the background? How do you know? Here she is trying her best. Every time she's saying, sorry, I'm so sorry." Really taught me a lesson. Pastor and author Gordon MacDonald encourages to move with the seasons. And I really like this. Every season, every decade, he suggests working on three things: conversion, character, and calling. And he means by that, in every season of our lives, and sometimes it's easier just to sort of look back over the past few decades to sort of recognise what's been going on to start with. But in every season of life, to look for a fresh call from God, fresh way in conversion, fresh way in which he's changing us, moving us on. A fresh call for each phase of life. What's the new call? And fresh things that he's doing, developing in our character. What's been the challenges in this decade for me? Do you see? Fresh calling, character, and conversion. Sorry, I haven't got enough time to just let you talk about that one, but let's just keep going because we're nearly there now. Number 11, checking our motivations. And again, this ties in with character, doesn't it? Because if our character is in a good place, our motivations will be in a good place. But keep checking ourselves, because it's so easy just for our motivation to be in the wrong place. You know, finding that actually there's a real little niggle of just coming in, wanting to succeed, my thing, wanting to be the best. A need for praise and admiration, so that's what we're striving for, that's what we're wanting. A competitive streak that's just getting out of control. So look out for that, checking our motivation. And last of all, keeping on growing. And this must be, you know, one of the main things for us, that sense, as Paul said this morning, of always having our learner badges on, always saying there's something more to learn in the Christian life, you know, about the people around me, about God. There is always so much more to learn, so much more to learn about myself. I'm still a mystery, you know, so much more to learn. And we need to keep this healthy, conscientious, and deliberate sort of learning attitude. Rick Warren says, while we worry about how fast we grow, God is concerned about how strong we grow. See, God views our lives from and for eternity. That's why he's not in a hurry. You know, we want a seminar or a sermon or a you know, an experience that instantly sorts out our problems, gives us that sort of, you know, yeah, okay, now I'm firing on all the cylinders. But real maturity is never the result of one single experience, no matter how personal or moving, powerful or moving. Growth is gradual. Now, why does it take so long for us to change? It can sometimes be frustrating, can't it? But here are several reasons. We find it hard sometimes to face the truth about ourselves. We've all got very good, maybe, at hiding our failings and excusing our faults. And it takes time to develop a humble and teachable spirit. Growth is often painful and scary, if we're honest. Change sounds wonderful. We all say we want it, but actually so often we prefer what's comfortable and familiar. People often build their identity around their defects, as I said earlier. You know, they say things, you know, it's just like me. You know, I'm always so scatty or so forgetful. You know, we build our identity around those sayings. We're slow learners. We often have to relearn a lesson again and again and again. Don't you find that? Particularly when it's something that's just stuck to us. We have to relearn it in different ways again and again. We have a lot to unlearn. And I feel this particularly as I've got older. You know, most of our problems and bad habits took years to develop. And they're not going to go away just in a moment. They need time and persistence to unravel. You know, the Bible calls it, doesn't it, taking off the old self and putting on the new. And that's in that verb, those putting on and taking off and putting on, it's a constant. It's not a once for all. I'm afraid it's a constant putting off and taking on. It's annoying, isn't it, how bad habits can take no time at all to learn, and good ones need lots and lots of practice. But that's why, again, God put us in community. That's why he put us alongside each other, to inspire us as we look at each other, to encourage us as we stand alongside each other, to prompt us as we, you know, spur each other on, say, yes, you can do it. And even to correct us when we're in a close-knit family, to correct each other. And I've left you on that last page with a spiritual MOT, which I think is just a really sort of helpful thing to do, say once a year, looking back over the past year, asking ourselves questions, you know, just trying to persist in this whole thing of, yeah, I want to grow, I want to develop, I want to move on, I want to learn. I'm a learner. And I just want to end with this lovely verse from Philippians 3. I've written it down in the Message version. But it says this, I'm not saying, this is Paul, St. Paul speaking, isn't it? And he says, I'm not saying that I have this all together, that I've made it, but I am well on my way. And don't worry, we want to be saying that. I am well on my way. I am on. I am moving, reaching out for Christ who has so wondrously reached out to me. Friends, don't get me wrong, he says. By no means do I count myself an expert in it. Even St. Paul, I'm no expert in all of this. But I've got my eye on the goal and where God is beckoning me onwards to Jesus. And I'm off and running and I'm not looking back. And isn't that our prayer?
Yes.
You know, I'm off and running and I'm not looking back. I'm looking forward.
Bless you all. Well done.
I'm sorry, it was a whistle-stop tour. We scooted over, skipped over so many very, very deep things. But please, just see these as tools in your hands to just take away, use, talk amongst yourselves. Make sure you're in, you know, alongside people who can help you, work with you, encourage you. But thank you for being here.